Welcome to the podcast of Story Story Night. Story Story Night is a live storytelling program in Boise, Idaho, inspired by The Moth. More information can be found at storystorynight.org. Both of today's stories were recorded at the live event on the 24th of May, 2010, at the Linen Building. The theme of the event was Crushes, Stories of Infatuation. Today's first story is by Jessica Holmes. Jessica had a summer of disappointing crushes in Ketchum, Idaho, and still has a crush on David Sedaris. Yay.
All right. Well, I really love the story of crushes because I tend to think that when people have a crush on someone, they act like a complete idiot for the most part. This is definitely true for me. When I have a crush, since as long as I can remember, I tend to awkwardly stare at that person. I completely ignore their existence, except for the moments when I have a chance to awkwardly stare at them. So I'll demonstrate my awkward staring to you, sir. I have a crush on you, okay? I've been shunning you for weeks. So far, it has never worked, and I've been single for most of my adult life. Oh, actually, it did work on one person who I'm still dating today. He is a musician. So that is called an interested audience member. This story really starts in Ketchum, Idaho, the place of Hemingway and Bruce Willis and glitterati and posh outdoor types and such. And I had just graduated from College of Idaho with a degree in English literature, which is one of those, what the hell are they going to do with that degree degrees? So I had no idea, but I did have a job. I was working for the Forest Service as an interpretive ranger. So basically, I sat at the front desk, and occasionally they had me do tasks that I was completely unqualified for, like paint trees for a fire ecology display, and these trees were the most grotesque-looking things you have ever seen. They were spindly little toothpicks. I'm sure they wanted to fire me, and I'm sure they burned it the year that I left, but I was still employed there, living in a double-wide trailer 8 miles north of Ketchum. The day that I had gotten my job and went up there was Independence Day, and that day my car broke down. So I was left with this bike that my aunt gave me for a graduation present, which is this probably from the 1940s, one speed, you backpedal to brake, which is really hard. And it makes this little squeaky sound when you ride it. So the only way that I could ever see civilization was to ride this little squeaky bike back into town. But anyway, so this whole Ketchum experience had three crushes in it, basically. My first crush, I call Bigwood. And not for the reasons that you would hope, but because I know, it's true, it's too bad, but it's because he worked at Bigwood Bakery and made bread, and he did give me a lot of free bread, but he was short, and when he felt like getting intimate, he would talk to me like he talked to his dog. He really loved his dog. I think he spent a lot of time with that dog, but he was like, "Do you want to come into the bedroom?" It was truly, truly reviling. So the next crush that I had a little bit more hope for. He came in to buy wood from me. He started with one cord and then came in for another cord and got my phone number, and all the information I had about him was on his little permit form. So I fantasized about where he lived, and it was like a Ketchum address. It looked like it was right downtown Ketchum. I was super excited. I thought maybe he'd be rich, and I wouldn't have to worry about my English lit major and my incompetence at making trees. But he was cute, too. He had these beautiful blue eyes and this great dark hair, and I was really excited about this date. So we had a date, finally. And met at the coffee shop, and over coffee, he told me he was 46, which I wasn't really anticipating, because at the time, I was 23. Over sushi, he told me that he had a daughter, and that he lived with her in a double-wide trailer as well. Yeah, and his ex-wife, I think they were ex-wife, was in prison for methamphetamines. And then over drinks, he told me that he was molested as a child. And then I just got drunk, basically. And, my staring technique and how effective that was, I hadn't made out with anybody in like a year at that point. And I was like, I'm gonna get something out of this night. So he takes me to my fantasy house in Ketchum, which he was a tiler or something. He tiled the whole thing. It was empty and we made out. And so over the fireplace, basically, he pulls out the big wood and says, leans in and says, I have herpes. It was the worst day of my entire life, bar none. So this was a miserable summer. I was going through, it was a miserable summer. So one day though, I squeaked my way into town, 8 miles, pushing this one gear bike, 8 miles into town on the side of the highway, right? And there was this great bookstore in Ketchum, and I stopped at that bookstore and I saw this green book that just drew me to it, and it was David Sedaris. It was Me Talk Pretty One Day. And I sat outside on a table at a coffee shop and read that thing cover to cover. And it probably was the only time I laughed that entire summer. I just felt David Sedaris is one of those writers that is like, his painfully awkward experiences are way worse than yours. His moments of job incompetence or relationship effing up are so much worse than yours that it just makes you feel like a free human being. I love David Sedaris. This was my beginning of my passion for David Sedaris that has continued to this day. I love David Sedaris. I have every single one of his books on tape, and instead of listening to music, even though I'm dating a musician, I just listen to David Sedaris books over and over and over again. He actually is why I wanted to start this program, because I knew that he had a venue in New York that he used to tell his stories for, and I just wanted that so bad in Boise. So it's really thanks to David Sedaris that this thing is happening right now. Thank you, David. Yes, but fast forward several years into my passion. I am a total cheapskate, so I don't buy anything new. Or if I do, it has to be like marked down 80-90% off or whatever. But David Sedaris is the one author that will buy his book as soon as it comes out in the bookstore. So there was the bookstore before A Novel Adventure. I can't remember what it was called. There was this bookstore right downtown, and I worked downtown at the time, and I decided to go to the bookstore and get his new book, When You Are Engulfed in Flames. So I went there and got the book, and the guy behind the cash register, I was just talking about how much I love David Sedaris. The guy behind the cash register told me that David Sedaris would, in fact, be in town in a couple of weeks and would be giving a small thing at that bookstore. So I was completely thrilled, sort of. I kind of hate author meetings because I get crushes on authors like I do on people, so I tend to do the same thing that I do to... I do. It's so awful. It's pathetic. But So the day I told some of my work colleagues and whatever, so the day of the author signing, nervously, it was around lunchtime, I went with some of my work colleagues to the bookstore. And as soon as I got there already, it was a little bit weird because there weren't that many people there, but the people that were there looked almost exactly like me. They were a little bit quirky. They had dark hair. They were... Some of them wore glasses. They were like my same build. They just looked like me, which was really weird, I thought. And then we wait for a while. David is not coming the time that he said he was going to come. And then we were just kind of nervously waiting. And then we see this vision through the door. It was David Sedaris. He is shorter than you would even think he is. He is like... I don't know. He was sitting down when I met him, but he was short. And he was just really as I had imagined him. He had he was sweating a lot. He always talks about how he sweats a lot. He was sweating a lot. You could see the little puddles through his shirt and dripping down his face. And he had like little moles everywhere. And oh, I was just so in love. I didn't know what to say to him, so I was just like frantically like trying to figure out what I was going to say to him. So I was looking at the magazine rack, and I saw this magazine of his sister, Amy Sedaris, who's a comedian, and I don't know why, but she was coming out of this cake in a party dress. I thought it was cute, so I rolled it up and put up my hand, like back pocket, and talked to you about your sister, whatever. So I was in line, and the woman in front of me had this big stack of books, and she was telling David Sedaris about how she came out to her parents, and like this incredibly intimate, detailed, really long story, as David signed like 13 books, right? So I came up to David Sedaris right after her and had my one new copy of When You Are Engulfed in Flames and put it in front of him and just stared at him and didn't say anything like I do. So he asked me my name, and I told him it was Jessica, and I just waited for him to be like, oh, I can tell that you're an amazing person and a great writer, and I know that you know me because I know you. But no, he looked up at me and he said, so Jessica, how did you hear about this? And I said, well, the guy who works here told me about it, and he's like, I just came here to sign stock. There shouldn't be anybody here. And I was like, oh, that must be so awkward for you. Which is really the perfect thing to say to David Sedaris, because almost any situation is bound to be awkward for him. But I realized, actually, it was pretty awkward for me, too. So I pull out my Reserve magazine. I'm like, that's your sister. And he said, yeah, it is. Sign my book, and I walk away. It was actually a pretty terrible meeting, but everybody else around me, he was really nice to. Like, the person behind me, he had this stalker who somehow she found the hotel he was staying at, and she always sent him these really crappy candies, like the little chalky kinds that nobody ever eats. So he just gave away the candies and talked to everybody and was really cordial and nice. So I think he got his anger out on me. But what I realized is that the person who had worked there had called David Sedaris' agent, because he was going to be in town anyway, speaking at Hastings, and had booked him to sign stock at a certain time at this bookstore. And he only told girls that he had a crush on, is my theory, who look like me. So this is really a crush inside a crush story. So I was actually wondering after this experience, horrible experience with David Sedaris, if it would change the way that I thought of him, or I wouldn't be able to listen to him anymore or read him anymore. But it's actually not true, because what David Sedaris gave me is the perfect David Sedaris story of painful awkwardness. And I feel that he dedicated this story to me, and I'll read you his dedication to this story. To Jessica, I'm so happy you can walk. David Sedaris.
Today's story slammer is Christina Peterson. Christina tells of eventually connecting with her crush after opening a bar in Boise in the late 70s.
Okay, Boise, Idaho, 1977. 12 years of recession. The downtown is practically closed. There is nothing. You remember, nothing going on in Boise, Idaho, which meant anything goes. So me and my three friends, we decide, God, we don't have any place to party that likes to party like we like to party. So what do? You start a bar. You got no money. You got nothing. We started a bar. We took over this biker bar on Broadway right next to the Suds. And we named it Desmond and Molly. And I know Jeannie was there. We called it a fringe bar. The Suds called it the gay bar because everybody was welcome at Desmond and Molly. We had live music every night of the week. We had chess tournaments, we had lesbian potlucks, we had experimental theaters, experimental film festivals, we had theater festivals. It was a place to meet and greet, and I had little sessions with the three guys, and I said, any woman that comes into this bar, you don't have to wipe her ass, but you make sure she feels safe here. We had the first wine by the glass in town. We had the first bagels and cream cheese in town. And we had 35-cent glasses of Pabst on tap, the cheapest beer in town. Well, I took the daytime shifts, so I just would show up there in the morning with my little dog who got to bartend with me every day, and one of my partners was a man that I was seeing, and he was working nights. And he kept telling me, you got to come in and see this guy who plays at night for us. He's fantastic. He's wonderful. And the first time he told me that, I felt this plumb bob drop right through the center of my being, and I thought, danger. I don't want to meet this guy. I don't even want to meet him. So a couple months later, my partner keeps saying, you got to come and see this guy. You got to come and see this guy. And so finally one night, I dragged myself down to the bar, and yeah, you guessed it. You know that feeling. I mean, you want to shit your pants and you want to scream, thank God, thank you, God, at the same time. Well, I've never been a woman to leave a man for another woman or a man. I kept those two distinctly separate. But the rules are the rules. I didn't want to meet this man, but I started coming in every night and wrapping myself around a cigarette and a beer and hiding in the corner and just dying of love and dying of love. And of course, all the other women in the bar were gaga over him and petting him and flirting with him. And I'm a feminist. I do not compete with my sisters. If I want something, I win. I'm so ashamed of myself. This was the 70s. Never wanted to get married. I just knew that guys had the most fun, and I wanted to be with the guys, people that had fun. So anyway, I decide, how am I going to get this guy's attention? And I mean, really get his attention. And I happened to be a belly dancer at the time, so I told my belly dance troupe, why don't we play his break? You know, and if he's not smoking pot out and back, he's going to see me in at my best. Well, I had gone to New York City to buy a belly dance costume, and I didn't know how to ride the subway, so I walked like 100 miles to this little old house where this woman made belly dance costumes and fell in love with this white beaded belly dance costume, except it was like a size D cup, which you see around now all the time, but back in the 70s, I don't know what was going on, but women didn't have that kind of... I had to buy that costume. I bought that costume, and I wore that costume that night. Now, it was all filled with stuffing, and I was just sort of laid over the top of it. Turns out later I found out he was a breast man, so I had that going for me. The first time I got to dance with this guy was at Jeannie and Danny's Christmas party. The night Mike Hoffman found out he was going to be an Oxford scholar. So Gene and Danny, we always saw as our godparents for our relationship. Through, you know, addiction and infidelity and all the ravages of the leftovers of the 1960s, my partner and I just celebrated our 30th non-marriage anniversary. I'm still not a romantic. I'm still not interested in getting married. But, man, when magic happens, you just can't deny it when it's bigger than you. The only hang-up during the whole situation was the guy's name was Chip. And when we got off alone together, I said, I can't sleep with a guy named Chip. And he said, oh, well, that's just my nickname. My real name is Asa, and that's the love of my life. And I still want to say thank you to Desmond and Molly, and thank you for the recession in Boise, and maybe that'll bring us all a lot of luck. And thank you to Danny and Jeannie Bean for being our godparents, because we always look at them as our godparents for love.
The Story Story Night podcast is produced by Boise State Public Radio. Pledge your support at radio.boisestate.edu. Story Story Night is a monthly live storytelling program created and presented by Alley Repertory Theater, the Boise State University Story Initiative, and The Cabin. Story Story Night is inspired by The Moth. Music for Story Story Night is by Dan Costello. Listen to more of Dan's music at hearcostello.com. Thank you for listening.